Welcome to Simple Life Radio, stories for the adventurous at heart. I'm your host, Cynthia Fernandez, and I'll be with you for this hour. We're going to focus on real life experiences and perspectives from the folks around the Central Coast of California. The show was born from a love of story, storytelling, and a desire for a deeper connection between all living things, one person at a time. You know, during the holidays, there's always a little bit of a flair around sensitivity, caring, and compassion. And I love that about the holidays. The need for compassion, of course, is there all year round, but that doesn't lessen the value of it during the holidays. And this time of year can also be a very difficult time, too. Emotional roller coasters that relate to feelings of rejection, maybe a lack of self-acceptance and self-love. Bullying has been a growing issue among young people. School bullying statistics in the U.S. show that about 1 in 4 kids in the U.S. are bullied on a regular basis at school. There's verbal bullying, and the most common type is verbal bullying. About 77% of all students being bullied in some way or another. These types of bullying can include spreading rumors, yelling obscenities, or other derogatory terms based on the individual's race, gender, sexual orientation, religion, etc. And as a social networking, you know, is growing in our era, there's also cyberbullying. And one of the most prevalent types of cyberbullying occurs between teens. About 80% of all high school students have encountered bullying in some fashion online. The growing numbers are being attributed to some aspects of, you know, violence among youths, and including both homicide and suicide. Well, our guest today, Justin Scheffler, has had a lot of experience with this and is here to talk with us about it. And he's published a book titled Fractures, which shares much of his journey. Welcome, Justin.
Hello.
Well, I'm glad to have you here in the studio. It's nice to have a live show, and I understand that you're actually a resident in Salinas.
Yes, I am. I'm from Salinas.
Yeah, so there's going to be, I think our airwaves reach to Salinas, so you may have some friends listening. Well, I wanted to ask you about the bullying. What do you see as the needed solution to address or prevent bullying in schools? And would that have helped you at the time? And maybe you can share a little bit about your experience around bullying specifically.
Well, I was bullied as an adolescent and a youth. I didn't fit in with the boys, and I didn't fit in with the girls, and I was bullied a lot as a child. I was even bullied by the teachers that made fun of me because I was dyslexic. So bullying in my world was very prevalent. And I know that adolescents and youth that have learning disabilities, or that may be gay, or that may just look different than, quote, the normal, whatever normal is,
right,
may feel bullied. And what to prevent them? It comes from before school even starts. It comes from parents teaching kids how to talk about feelings and talk about, you know, what they're feeling, how to deal with feelings, how to manage their feelings. It comes from curriculums in schools saying, this is how we communicate with each other, this is how we deal with feelings, so that the bullies have a way to deal with their emotions that are inside and not not explode and not pick on people, and there's a sense of acceptance.
So you're speaking about the bullies themselves being able to basically let off steam and really handle their emotions responsibly.
Right.
And I would guess there's also a component having to do with the person being bullied needing to understand his or her feelings.
Absolutely.
And have someone that they can talk to in confidence for some guidance.
Absolutely. I think when you're dealing with a bullying situation, all too often the schools blame the person who's being bullied. And the problem is that it's a twofold situation. The schools need to provide the therapeutic situation or the help to the person who's being bullied, and they also need to provide the structure for the people who are bullying to sort out the situation. They need to deal with both parties because both parties are having problems.
For sure. Now, something that I pulled up on the internet talked about bullying, and it mentioned that it really comes from an imbalance of power, that typically those who engage in bully-like behaviors, maybe they use their physical strength or maybe their power of popularity to harm or control or manipulate other people. Was that something that you felt in your own experience was true?
Absolutely. Because I was, as I said, didn't fit in with the girls and the boys, I was grappling with the fact that I wanted to be a boy as a girl, and I wanted to hang out with the boys. The girls didn't accept me, and so what happened was that not just the all the girls, but specifically what drove the girls to make fun of me were the popular ones, the ones that had all the money, the ones that kind of were the ringleaders. They're the ones that drove everyone. They dictated what was going to happen, how I was going to get made fun of that day. Mm-hmm. And it was the same way with the boys. It was the ringleaders. It was the people who were the most popular or the smartest who were going to dictate how I was going to be made fun of that week.
Man. Yeah. The other point that I see here is that the bully is a person who really doesn't do things by accident. And the purpose of whatever they choose to do intends to bring physical or emotional injury to the person that they have targeted.
Yeah, I definitely believe that. I definitely agree is that it's a premeditated.
Yeah, and, it would really help to hear how your response in that kind of a situation played out. I mean, I can't say that I was bullied an awful lot. I know that I didn't fit in school growing up. Certainly going through puberty was a difficult time. Anybody who's listening, maybe you can relate. But in terms of the kind of experiences that you describe in your book titled Fractures, there's a lot of suffering that I saw between those pages. How did you respond and really kind of learn how to deal with it in a responsible way as you got older? In life?
As an adolescent and a teen, I shut down a lot. I shut down to my peers, and I became a lone wolf in a lot of ways so that I didn't have to feel what was going on because I was bullied so much. Unfortunately, I took some negative turns. You know, I turned to alcohol and drugs, and so there were some negative paths that I took. But at the same time, and I also engaged with a lot of fighting with my family, and I think, unfortunately, my mother was the brunt of that, and she was the closest to me, so she took a lot of brunt. So there were a lot of coping mechanisms that I used in my early world that were would be seen as negative coping mechanisms. But at the same time, you know, I've learned from them. And as in my 30s, once I found a therapist that I trusted, that I wasn't playing games with, because for years I played games with my therapist. If they wanted to deal with something that was important to me, I would just exit stage left. I didn't want to deal with it. But in my 30s, once I found a therapist that I trusted and will work with, I learned what relationships were all about, and I learned what feelings were all about, and I learned how to trust people, and I learned all of that so that I could acknowledge that people weren't going to hurt me like they did when I was younger. But it took all of my world to deal with that. I mean, the bullying really stuck with me for most of my adult life.
And how do you, it sounds to me, first of all, I just really want to thank you for being willing to come on the air and talk about really vulnerable personal aspects of your own life experience. And that takes a lot of courage. And I'm hoping that for those of the audience that are listening, it's going to maybe help or resonate for someone either directly or indirectly as a family member. I'm curious how you saw these aspects playing out in your life, the patterns of bullying that get internalized. I imagine that they get projected out in a social situation even when they're not present. But I'd love to hear from you how you saw that happening for yourself.
In terms of my relating to other people?
Yeah.
When I was bullied, my self-esteem was broken down so much that I became judgmental of myself and judgmental of other people.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of that, I mean, in one way, I got so angry with myself and with the people who were bullying me that I guess in one way I became somewhat of a bully myself because I was judgmental of other people and I made fun of other people at the same time.
Mm.
But, you know, at the same time, I knew what it was like to bully. So I knew it was like to be bullied. So I also had this heart in me that was like, I felt bad for people who were bullied. So I fought against the bullies that were bullying. So, you know, I kind of was in this confusing state, I think, because, you know, I was so angry at the people that were bullying me that I kind of lashed out a lot at them, and I lashed out at other neutral people that were trying to help me.
Mm.
So I don't know if that answers your question.
That does answer my question, and it also reminds me of a book that I've read a long time ago called The Art of War. And I know I've mentioned this before on the air that in that book, there's strategies not really about war as we define the word, but interactions or conflicting dynamics. And the response to defend is seen as an adversarial response because so many times we have jumped the gun to assume that we need to defend ourselves. As you're describing the situation, perhaps from what you experienced, you just kind of expected it. But oftentimes it's not the case. And so then there's conflict
right.
begun. Yeah. And these, you know, I think we should take a break soon. But before we do, I want to ask you, these coping mechanisms that you spoke of adopting when you sort of singled yourself out and stayed really separate, I think that's a pretty common response. You know, just to have a numbing effect. Was it, you know, in the book, I noticed you were 12 when you started drinking.
Yes, I was 12 when I started drinking. It was also the same year that I was sexually abused. So it was, there was a whole, like, grouping of things that really came together when I was 12. And I really shut down and kind of went into a box of feelings. I shut everyone out and I shut down completely and numbed out.
Wow. Well, my heart goes out to you. I'm so glad to see you now as a published author and obviously a very solid individual in the community. And I very much appreciate, just from what little bit that I've heard and read from the book, what kind of a journey you've had. For those of you that are listening, we are at AM 540 KRXA, and we are also live streaming online at RadioMonterey.com. Justin Schliffler is an author, again, of the book Fractures, a story of vulnerability and courage. We'll be taking a short break here soon, and if you'd like to hear the show or let a friend know about the show later, you may hear it at Simple Life Radio on pilgrimsway.com. Just go ahead and click on that tab, Simple Life Radio, and it'll have a link for you there. When we come back, we'll be speaking more with Justin on Simple Life. Stay with us. Drugs and alcohol at a very young age. I wanted to ask you, Justin, for all those parents who are listening, hearing about drinking coming up at age 12, etc., was that something facilitated because of availability? I mean, did you have easy access to alcohol in the home?
It was available because of it was easy access, and it not necessarily where it was the only place that I got it, but it was a modeling. It was something that I saw every day, and I thought it was okay. And it was also something that was very prevalent in my private school that I was at. It was like a normal thing.
Among the kids my age,
yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, and it was among the 12, 13, 14, 15-year-olds. There were a lot of kids that were experimenting at that point.
Was this you mentioned it being a private school. Was it a very affluent?
It was a very affluent private school.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I guess it's a good thing when you can't afford some
yeah.
things. you speak in your book, Justin's book titled Fractures, which he was just at our store at Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden in downtown Carmel doing a book signing. Justin, you speak about wanting to fit in with the other boys, and I wonder how much of that positioning is the result of being at that particular age or stage of life, or was there something else really going on altogether?
It wasn't that necessarily, it wasn't that stage. From a very early age, the first moment that I understood there was a difference between boys and girls, which happens when you're 5, 4, 5, 6, I knew there was something wrong. I knew that I was different, and I thought my parents had made a mistake, and I thought that I was wrong in some way. And so I didn't know the words, and I didn't express it to my parents, and I didn't talk about it, but all the way through my growing up as a little child, I wanted to be a boy. I even asked for male genitalia for one of my birthdays.
Aww.
And I, not to my parents, but to a babysitter.
Okay.
And so I knew that what I wanted. I didn't have a clue that I was transgender at that point. I didn't even know what that word was
right.
until my 30s. And so wanting to fit in with the boys, I just identified with them. I identified with their clothes. I identified with with how they played. I didn't understand girls at all. I didn't understand their Barbies. I didn't understand pink things. I didn't like any of it. So it was just the way things were. I don't think it was just because of that age. I think it was something that I felt since very young.
Right. Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. You also shared about fear of being seen and experiencing rejection, being really vulnerable to rejection. Although I wouldn't want to suggest that the issue of gender identity is really on a par with other body issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how we can stack them or compare them, because at a point there's such a thing as like maximum containment. As a girl, when I was going through puberty, I felt wrong about my body altogether. Like I didn't know why my body was changing, and I didn't know how it was supposed to be. And I had Barbie dolls, and I had TV and other sort of visual images that I thought was what I was supposed to match. Like they don't really have a Barbie going through puberty. Maybe the Bratz dolls, I don't know. But again, it's an awkward time. And as you say, at that particular age, you don't have a lot of vocabulary to describe these thoughts or feelings. And I guess to some degree, because I'm trying on the story as you've described your journey, and I'm trying to relate. And I would imagine our listeners may also be trying to relate. Is there just such a thing as whatever your body issues are your body issues?
You know, as someone who is transgender, I think you have body issues, and I have body issues growing up. I was heavy at one point because of medication that I was put on. That creates body issues. So you have that whole fat, thin body issue. You have that whole thing. I had very low self-esteem growing up. So did I look good in these jeans? Did I look good in that? Did I look good in this? Whether you're identify with females or males, it doesn't matter. You have all those body issues. So I had all of that. It's a whole plethora of body issues. As a 38-year-old, I still have some of that. We all do as individuals. But, you know, the whole transgender body issue that continues to this day is that you in transitioning, you have to really work toward acceptance of yourself, that you are accepting yourself as what is male or what is female, what is that gender. Because right there are times in my world where I feel caught between two genders, because I wake up in the morning and I say I'm male, but when I look in the mirror, I may not look male because I don't necessarily have male parts. So it's like you have to look at that situation and say, I'm caught between two worlds. So, but what is male and what constitutes a male and masculinity? So I have to accept that, and I have to really define that in my own world. And that's body image, you know?
That's right.
So, you know, that's where I am.
You know, one of the other things I would add to that is, aside from the gender of male or female, isn't it awesome when people really want to be themselves and really, you know, without thought or staying independent of what society projects as male or female? You know, as a woman, there have been plenty of times in my life that, for example, I stopped wearing makeup. It's like, what is that all about? Why do I have to buy and wear makeup, and what do I wear it for? And I stopped wearing frilly things, you know? It's like I really wanted to explore myself without the teenage projections and assumptions that I have to be this image on the outside, because I really didn't have a sense of myself yet on the inside.
Right, exactly. You have to explore what your sense of self is and be your own identity. And that's, you know, I think being a transgender person, when I transitioned, that was the ultimate point of being myself, and being really identifying with myself. And when I came to California, when I met my therapist, that where I was completely honest, that was the point where I really laid out my life, and I became myself, and the growth started happening, you know. And then when I got sober at 35, that's another growth period where I really became myself. So in 8 years, my life is completely transitioned to the point where I'm truly where I am, and I may not be cured because my fractures are all biologically based, where they're not going to go away, but I have ways to cope with them. But I'm an individual, and I accept things the way they are. I struggle with them, but I accept them as an individual, and I am who I am, and that's okay.
Bravo. Yeah. We're in studio today with Justin Schleifer, and Justin's book recently published titled Fractures. Justin, maybe you can tell us why you chose that as a title.
I chose that because I was actually in a therapy session with my therapist, and we were going over the topics of my book, and she talked about a client that she had osteogenesis imperfecta, which is a brittle bone disease, basically, that you break bones, and so fractures. And I thought about it, and we talked about it, and I was like, that's kind of like my world, is that it's hidden fractures, that my world is all hidden, that you don't know that he or she broke bones. You know, you don't know that. And I have these issues that you don't know that I have.
They're invisible to the eye.
Yeah. They're invisible issues until I open up about them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes them fractures. And so that's why.
That's awesome. So if people are trying to find your book, do you want to name a few places where you have it being distributed?
Yes, they are available at Bookstore Santa Cruz, at the Capitol Book Cafe, the bookstore.
Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
On Amazon and Netflix.
Different genre.
Different genre there. At Kindle.
Kindle. Awesome. Well, you know, in your book, talking about trying to really deal with a lot of the transgender issues, I know there was a point where you had suicide come up as a possible coping mechanism. And I wonder if you can speak a little bit about that and share with us what that was like for you and what really was the turning point to get you moving beyond that point.
Beyond the suicide point?
Yeah.
Basically, I've struggled with the suicide point for most of from my teens all the way through. And at times I still struggle with it because that's part of the whole bipolar phenomena, is that you go, you know, up and down. But, you know, with the transgender issue, I hated myself. And with the alcohol, it was a depressant. I hated myself. I was suicidal. I didn't want to be alive, and I wanted to be a guy. And that was, you know, the suicide, I didn't see a point. I had no hope. So, and now I still struggle at times with that, and I work towards with my faith and with therapy and with faith and with my friends and, you know, with honesty. I work towards, you know, accepting myself as who I am and accepting different parts of myself and accepting what is and having hope. And that's, you know, it's all about hope. If you don't have hope and you don't identify with people and people can't identify with you and you realize that you're not alone in the world and that you have to accept help and give help. And, you know, I work with teens, I work with others, and I am, you know, with this book, I've provided help to people, and I find it provided a connection for people. And that type of thing, working with others, is what gives me hope and helps me to stay, realize that if I committed suicide, what would that say?
Exactly.
So, you know.
So tell us about the work you're doing with teens.
I work with teens, in a therapy group, and so I meet with them once a week, and we discuss topics, therapy topics, you know, depression, bipolar, sexuality, anything from light day-to-day issues. And you know, I also obviously I give back in AA all the time. And so I'm always giving back. I'm trying to give back. I'm working, you know, I try to work on making sure that there's no stigma, that people have the education around addiction and mental health and gay and lesbian and transgender issues, so that there's no stigma, that people don't feel marginalized. And so, yeah, I've been really trying to work hard to provide a place where people feel comfortable and can find a resource. So,
well, it sounds like that was really beneficial for you to find in your own life.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, the issue of service comes up a lot around being happy and being grateful and feeling like you have something going for yourself. And I just wonder, since you mentioned that, was, in your opinion, is that a really significant aspect of having validation for your contribution or thinking about yourself differently when you see that you can give to others?
I struggle still with depression, and it's an ongoing struggle with me and my bipolar. But knowing that I can give back, and when my therapist reminds me that I'm giving back, that's when I realize that I feel better and I'm outside of myself. And that's when I am not depressed, even if it's just an hour during that day when I'm in that therapy group with those kids, or I'm in an AA meeting, or I'm in a step meeting or talking to a new alcoholic. You know, that's when I can get outside of myself and say, okay, there's a point to not being depressed.
Wow, that's awesome. We're speaking in studio today with Justin Schleifer, and he is the author of Fractures, a book about his journey on many levels of vulnerability and transformation. We're going to have this show up on a podcast that you can either download or listen live online. If you want to access that, you can easily do that through the pilgrimsway.com website. And then, of course, click on Simple Life Radio, and it'll be right there for you. So we're going to go to another break and then come back and talk more with Justin Schleifer on Simple Life. Accept it the more that you speak about it openly. But we were talking about, you know, giving back and how that really helps. It helps the pain or the depression that sometimes comes. And I was thinking to myself how in all the shows that I've done for this almost year, this is a really different kind of a subject matter. And I was mentioning to you, you know, off the air that it's really important to me to do it justice, because I think this is an important aspect of our community, of our culture, of our humanitarianism. And I mean, I'm not well versed in it. Just frankly, I'm not well versed in it. So there's this inherent kind of awkward, challenging, like I want to be careful to say the right things. And I'm sure you come across that from time to time. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are people that I think that people are inherently interested in it, though. Or, you know, some people are inherently interested. Those people who aren't don't even bother. But I think it's, you know, some people are interested in it, and some don't know how to breach the subject.
But that's really true.
When you have someone who is willing to talk about it, it makes it easier, I think, so.
Yeah, you're right. And I think the other thing that makes it easier, just in terms of exposure, I hate to say this, but if you've seen it on TV in the privacy of your living room,
yeah,
it gives you some sense of familiarity that the thing exists and what's kind of the size and shape and sound of whatever the
right
phenomena
mm-hmm.
is. And you must have a way within yourself that you can really identify when people are feeling awkward. You strike me as a very respectful person. I don't see you as being intrusive at all. Just very respectful and open if people want to know more about your story. And I just was curious if you encounter that a lot and have a sense of what that's like for the other person.
In terms of
being awkward and, you know, not wanting to say the wrong thing or not being familiar with the topic at all?
I think that when I've discussed, the people that I really have talked to are usually people that know about the topic. And they may not know a lot about the topic, but they are curious about the topic. So the people that have come to my book talks and even before I wrote the book, people in AA or in other circles who've kind of not known a lot about transgender or not known a lot about bipolar, who've wanted to know a little bit more, they come up and they ask certain questions, and I give them a little bit, and then I don't give them a lot at first because I want to kind of feel them out.
Right.
And, inevitably they'll ask another question, and I'll give them a little bit more, and we'll go into a conversation. Those people who don't really want anything, you know, don't really care about it, they go on their merry way. But I really have maybe one or two people have done that. Most people really want to hear it. They want to hear the story. They want to get more information, and they want to support you. I really have not met anyone who doesn't accept me 100% and doesn't want to, you know, get to know me and really, you know, be a part of my life. So.
Well, I think that's awesome. I'm so grateful to hear that. And at the same time, I want to encourage any of our listeners who are not familiar with the topic, whether it's bipolar or transgender or bullying for that matter, teens in trouble, this is a way for you to maybe get a little more familiar with the topic, be more comfortable within yourself, more secure within yourself around those issues, and then be more comfortable around people who may have this up for them, that, you know, you don't have to pull up that insecurity card that really creates the awkwardness to begin with, and sometimes even conflict or violence. Now, Justin, we don't have a lot of time left, but I did want to find out from you, given your story in your book titled Fractures, if you were parenting someone like yourself as your child, what would you do to support that journey, or maybe do differently than you experienced?
The number one thing I would do differently from what I experienced is, as a child, as growing up and teaching that child, is I would teach them about feelings. I would teach them about communication. I would give them more hugs.
Mm.
And I would get them to communicate more about their school experiences and make sure that they knew that they could come to me. Because I think ultimately it starts in grammar school and elementary school and before that. If you don't build that relationship and that communication and that connection, then you're not going to have it in high school, and you're not going to have it in, you know, later at middle school and that. And even as an adult, you can form that bond, but it's not going to be as tight as if you had it when you were, if you had that open, honest flow of feelings and communication and connectedness as you would when you were a little kid, 4, 5, 6, seven.
Mm. So as a preteen, for example, are there some classic signs that parents could notice to kind of alert them that there needs to be more attention here?
You know, adolescent pulling away, an adolescent isolating, not communicating, spending more time outside of the home and not spending time at home.
With family?
Yeah, with family, spending more time out with friends, not communicating about what friends are spending time with, grades dropping.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's really helpful to hear. We have, at least in this part of California, I know we have pretty good school systems and parent volunteers, so there's lots of adults as a ratio with the kids, school counselors, and breakout programs for the kids. So, you know, when all those adults are kind of looking for these signs and their communication skills are in motion, I would see that as a protective net to kind of help catch things that fall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wondered if you can share a little bit about future aspirations you might have in the works.
My future aspirations basically are to continue working with my book and to continue getting my message out there and work with others and work with specifically the youth. I would like to continue working with youth with these difficult issues. I just finished writing a book of poetry and with illustrations that I'm looking to publish. And I'm continuing to write another book that will be based on fractures. That'll be a book on how to use fractures. And so I'm working on that. And so that's basically the topics that I'm working on right now.
So you're staying really busy and keeping your voice moving.
Yes, absolutely, because it needs to move. There are people out there that are hurting still and need support.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's awesome. Yeah. So for the young people that you're working with, mm-hmm. These young people have families. Mm-hmm. Is there a program that also supports their education and ability to communicate?
I think that the therapist that I work with works with the families.
Got it. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I can't thank you enough for all of your ability to be vulnerable and open and just really come from the heart. And I realize that your intention is to help others who are in pain and in need that they might feel related to and find hope for themselves. But before I let you go, I want to find out, because we're co-sponsored on Simple Life Radio by Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden, what is your all-time favorite book?
My all-time favorite book, I always say, is my all-time favorite author, and that's Kurt Vonnegut. And I mean, any of his books, Slaughterhouse-Five, Cat's Cradle, any of his books, I absolutely love Kurt Vonnegut.
Awesome. Yeah, so you have a full collection.
Yes,
probably.
I have a full collection of Kurt Vonnegut.
I knew it. And what book are you reading now?
Far from the Tree by Andrew Solomon.
Far from the Tree. You know, a friend of mine just showed me that book and said,
"You got
to get this book."
It's an excellent book.
How would you describe that book?
It's about families learning to accept kids with disabilities and teaching about that.
And so. it's a very thick book.
It's a quick read, though.
It's a quick read?
Yeah, it's very good.
Whoa. Well, before we transition away from you, Justin, if you were to capsulize your message in your book, Fractures, what would you say?
I think what I would say is that you're not alone if you're struggling with depression or being transgender, or bullying, that there's always someone out there to help you, and there's always someone out there that feels the same as you. And all you need to do is reach out, and don't isolate. And above all, if you're feeling suicidal or something like that, don't stop communicating.
Don't give up.
Don't give up, yeah.
Yeah, there's always hope.
Yep.
Even though we can't see it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I so appreciate you joining me today on Simple Life Radio. Thank you, Justin, for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. And I noticed on the way over on the freeway, people were really rowdy. I'm not sure. It's a beautiful day on the coast. The sun is out. It isn't as cold as it has been. And I realize that for people who celebrate commercial holidays around this time of year, there could be a craze of needing to fill their holiday list. But be careful on the road. Don't give in to any suicidal tendencies or homicidal tendencies. And remember what you heard here from Justin today, that there's always hope. And one of the things that makes us feel better is when we think about other people. And I really appreciate that. Now, I want to tell you what's coming up a little further down the road here. Next week here on Simple Life Radio, my guest in studio will be Deborah Goldstein. And she is a philanthropist. I am really looking forward to that show because I had a very brief conversation with her in the bookstore, and I said, well, gosh, you know, I think that's great work, but I'm not really affluent. And she said, good, because there's lots of kinds of philanthropy. So I can't wait to pick her brain. She'll be here in studio with me next Saturday, 4 o'clock on Simple Life Radio. And then the following week, you know, I put the word out there. I haven't gotten any emails. My email is simplelife@pilgrimsway.com. I'm going to be my own guest on December 28th here on Simple Life Radio. And I would be happy to consider any questions that anyone would like to submit. My granddaughter told me she's getting a list together. But I'm going to be answering those questions on air. And I will be happy to do so. So I'm looking forward to that show. It's a very edgy show for me, but I'm up for it. And I totally love having call-ins. I know we haven't done that for a while, but those of you listening, if you don't have time to call in or the show doesn't allow for it, you can always send those comments via simplelife@pilgrimsway.com. That's my email. And also our Facebook page, Simple Life on Facebook, Simple Life Radio, one word. Happy to get those comments from you, suggestions and questions if you'd like to do that. It's been a joy to be here. I know our next show is going to be starting up at 5 o'clock. Frank and Linda Chavez are here from Chavez Family Jewelers, and their show is titled Life Stinks. They get to talk about things that aren't working too well and how you can help them work better. So hang in there. Don't let the holidays get you down. Talk to a friend, someone that you trust, or come by and see us at Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden, downtown Carmel on Dolores between 5th and 6th. I'll see you next week.